This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, Langkawi will be welcoming visitors once more from September 16th onwards with a travel bubble plan we discuss.
First, we find out how this is going to work. And then we talk about tips on flying safely. And finally, what will the future of travel look like as we slowly reopen locally?
So, of course, we want to know, are you ready to travel yet? What local locations have you missed visiting? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and all of this really began because yesterday Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob announced that Langkawi is going to open specifically for locals, for Malaysians, under a travel bubble plan beginning September 16th, and other destinations will be allowed to operate when that place's vaccination rate hits 80%.
So there's a sort of backstory to this, right? Because on Wednesday, Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin said that COVID-19 will now be treated as endemic and that it's time for Malaysians to learn to live with the virus. The Health Ministry also said that more than 84% of our adult population has received at least one dose of the vaccine. 64% have been fully vaccinated. So based on all of this, the Prime Minister said that the average vaccination rate among adults in each state is expected to reach 80% by the end of the month, 100% by the end of October. That's where the decision to sort of start pushing for the tourism industry to slowly open up is coming from. And I suppose as a sort of pilot project of sorts, which is what Langkawi is said to be.
Yes. And I just wanted to say before we get into what it's based on, earlier I said for Malaysians, but actually I don't think that's accurate. I apologize. I think it's more really for people who are here at the moment, because of course, as long as you are a domestic traveler and you've been fully vaccinated, you would be able to go. Now, this is theoretically based on the Phuket Sandbox program, which when it was announced, got a lot of attention. It was launched on July 1st and it was meant to be a pilot project for Thailand to experiment with international tourism during the pandemic. And Thailand, of course, very famously incredibly well known for tourism and therefore very famously very hard hit by the pandemic and the inability for people to travel to the country, within the country. And so the way it worked for Phuket, at least, was that domestic and international travellers could only enter the island if they had proof of vaccination and a negative COVID-19 test. And they've been able to land in, travellers have been able to land in Phuket directly from abroad without quarantining, provided they had those parameters in place. And they have to present a list of documents to complete a certificate of entry application online. And that includes things like the medical cert, medical insurance, proof of payment for an approved hotel for 14 nights, and the list goes on.
Yeah, so there are a number of things in place to do this. As of now, we don't know exactly how this is going to be translated into the Langkawi part of it. But I mean, this gives us a certain amount of indication, right? Things like needing to be vaccinated being the main thing, but also then having to do a test. In Phuket, for instance, you also have to install a specific app that sort of allows you to check in and check out. We already have My Sejahtera for that, so I assume they might use those. But I think more importantly, once you've made it into Phuket, you are free to travel within the island. So that's I think that's some indication as to what we might be able to expect when this opens up, which is actually not very long away, just slightly more than 10 days.
And the other thing about Phuket that I think is sort of crucial is that the timeline, because at the beginning, at least, there was all this talk of in the early, I don't even know what to call it anymore. What phase of the pandemic are we in? But when travel was first beginning really to be rediscussed, one of the things that kept coming up was, well, how long is a 5-day trip to Thailand going to be now? Because if I have to go there, quarantine before I'm able to go to my final destination, and then come back and again quarantine before I'm able to go back to work, then something like a simple 5-day vacation becomes closer to 2.5-3 weeks. And so something like the sandbox allows you to circumvent that, right? It allows you to actually be able to more closely go back to the way things were, meaning I fly in. Sure, I have to do a bunch of things when I arrive, but subsequently, I'm able to move around in a way that I think is at least fairly close to how it would have been in the past.
I think what would be interesting also is to see how this progresses for us, because Langkawi is an island. And you fly in, so it's a little, or you take the ferry in. There's a little bit more control in terms of how people come in and out, but if this is a pilot project, I'm curious to see what comes next as other places are opening up. How do we maintain? Are we going to restrict it to islands? What's next is actually something I'm very curious about.
So we want to know, are you ready to travel yet? And what local locations have you missed visiting? Because if you are ready to travel, then Langkawi is ready to receive you from September 16th onwards. But it is a pilot project, like we said. So who knows? Share your thoughts with us. You can call 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we will be speaking with Nigel Wong, Honorary Sec Gen at MATA. To find out more, keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. Our story today focuses on Langkawi, welcoming visitors from September 16th onwards with a travel bubble plan. Some details still need to be sketched out, but nevertheless, this is, I think, the beginning of our domestic tourism reopening. So we want to know, are you ready to travel yet? And what local locations have you missed visiting? Call us 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And for more, we are crossing over to Nigel Wong, Honorary Secretary General at MATA. Nigel, as always, welcome to the show.
Hey, ladies, glad to be back.
So we've been talking about this announcement from the Prime Minister, right? Do you think that really we're ready for this reopening of sorts?
Well, I think we're as ready as we ever will be. I mean, it's not as if we can really predict what's going to happen next. But the industry, not just the tourism industry, industries generally have to start, because we've been in this for way too long. People are starting to get the itch, you know, to travel as well. And I think people are just really, really cooped up. So we are ready. And the only way to find out if it's going to work is to put one foot in the water and run with it.
What have you heard from the industry players? How are they feeling about this initiative?
Well, most of the industry players are actually quite excited. More so, of course, the guys up in Langkawi. I mean, they're the first beneficiaries of this project. But most of the tourism industry has been expecting this. The reason is simple. If we are able to start testing a local sandbox, it means that we're actually one step in the direction of eventually opening up to international travelers.
So we spoke quite a bit just now about the sandbox initiative for in Phuket, and that's partly because at the moment we don't know that much exactly about how it's going to work for us. But what can you tell us about how successful that project was for Thailand?
Well, from what we know, the project was a success in that they actually managed to open and start welcoming tourists in. I mean, unlike some of our neighbouring countries like Singapore, who's had to do a couple of U-turns, you know, every time there was a spike. So on that note, we think they've been fairly successful in actually executing the sandbox. I mean, some figures are that only 0.3% of the travelers who went into Phuket were actually positive. So that's a really low number. And I suppose on the Thai side, they're a little bit disappointed that they couldn't achieve the numbers they initially wanted. But this has resulted in them actually looking up at opening a few more destinations. So in short, it does prove that the sandbox works, and it's just a matter of refining it and seeing how things go along the journey.
And how do you feel about that being implemented here for that how will that model translate?
It's very difficult to say if we're going to follow Phuket entirely. I mean, for starters, Phuket didn't encourage domestic travelers when they first started the sandbox. It was purely for international travelers. What we're doing is we're doing it the other way around. We're saying Malaysians travel to Langkawi first, and then we'll look at other markets. But I think what it means for us here is that We will probably follow a number of the things that Phuket has probably implemented. I mean, the need for not having to go through quarantine, of course, is a major thing. Of course, we're talking about fully vaccinated individuals, which was also done in Phuket as well. We're talking about at least 80% of the island's population being fully vaccinated. So all those are very similar. What I can say, though, is that we predict that most of the SOPs that are already in place will apply to our Malaysians traveling to Langkawi. So we don't see too much of an inconvenience for those thinking to spend their holidays in Langkawi soon.
And we spoke earlier about how this is applying to islands, right? Langkawi being an island, Phuket being an island. Moving forward, how else might our tourism sector begin to reopen?
Yeah, that's a tricky question, of course. And I know you ladies love giving tricky questions here. The islands, as you mentioned earlier on, are sort of ideal because they're separated from the rest of the mainland. So it's a little bit easier to control access to the islands. That being said, however, we might be able to take these guidelines or this model that we're introducing to the islands to maybe certain locations in Malaysia eventually. The protocols, the processes will be the same. It's probably just a matter of exposure. So, for example, what has been done in Langkawi could actually be replicated in places like Penang, you know, or even Kuala Lumpur. The only difference is that we're now talking about much greater access. But moving forward, like most of the rest of the world, we're looking at treating this as an endemic situation already. So moving towards this opening up of you know, travel is just one natural step in the right direction. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Kuala Lumpur and Penang, because I was going to ask you, will some locations be more challenging than others to implement this in?
Most definitely. I mean, if we're talking about the major cities, of course, unlike the islands where you can't really drive across. I mean, Langkawi, for example, and some of the other islands on the East Coast, you can drive across to Penang. But I think by the time we've actually experimented with the islands and we've gotten the SOPs in place, we're not to expect. We should have come quite far along the journey of vaccination. And that would mean that most of our population, like Europe, should be able to continue most of the economic activities and daily lives almost as normal. So I think this is just a matter of time before cities open up.
So in line with that, right, you mentioned earlier that there is this growing desire for travel, especially after not being able to for so long. And it's certainly something I think that both of us can relate to. Do you have a sense of what domestic travellers might be looking for?
Okay. The industry currently feels that demand may initially be a bit muted because we have to admit there is still the fear of traveling outside given the current rate of infections and news of the new variants. So it's normal. We will expect a lower number of people traveling. But I think based on what we know, the data we have so far, Malaysians are quite predictable. They will go to all their usual favorite hotspots, you know, especially when there's a lot of makan involved, right? And for those of us who are a bit more adventurous and the expat communities that are still here, the islands will definitely be high on that list.
So what can we do to reduce and manage the risks involved in traveling right now?
Well, the industry has taken great pains and actually has spent a lot of money trying to make sure that our people, our staff, you know, our processes are all to the highest quality. You know, we've actually got people trained in how to handle emergencies and how to identify problems. So that's all been done by the industry at the moment and many of the government agencies working in tandem with us. At the end of the day, though, it really all boils down to individual responsibility. So, you know, whether you're traveling to Langkawi or whether you're just, you know, going to your local supermarket, the same rules apply. Social distance, wear your masks, try and avoid close contact, and, you know, just keep a safe distance from everybody else.
What kinds of communication and, I suppose, displays of hygiene or reassurance do you think travellers might be looking for, whether it's from airlines or from hotels and the like?
Well, I mean, if you look at the announcement recently, I think just today by Malaysian Airlines, you know, they've got a lot of projects in the pipeline. You know, they're changing their filters on their planes way earlier in preparation for that trip up to Langkawi. You know, the airports have their own SOPs already in place that's been running for quite a while. The private industry, maybe I'll just mention it here. The three largest associations, the Malaysian Association of Hotels, MATA, and MASIUS, which looks at business events. We've engaged an international company to accredit all our members, making sure that they adhere to the strictest guidelines. So in terms of communication, I think most of the private sector and the government is starting to develop these communication plans. And I think the public will hear a lot more on what both these sectors are doing as far as safety and in travel is concerned.
Nigel, what would you like to leave us with?
Well, to all my fellow Malaysians out there, it's been a tough time. Some of you are itching to travel. Some of you are still hesitant. My advice to everyone is keep to the SOPs. Don't be afraid to travel if you want to. Do your best to stay safe. For those of you who are not comfortable, take a break, chill. Things will get better. And by then, you'll be able to, you know, get in a car, get on the road and go cuti-cuti Malaysia.
Nigel, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
That was Nigel Wong, Honorary Secretary General at MATA, talking to us about the pilot project of sorts in Langkawi, reopening for local tourists from September 16th onwards. We want to know, are you ready to travel yet? What locations have you missed? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we don't have to be on a beach to feel like we're on a beach with this next song. Here are the Beach Boys with Kokomo, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are talking today about Langkawi, preparing to welcome visitors, domestic visitors at least, from September 16th onwards, with a travel bubble plan that is at the moment a little bit light on exact details, though we do know that it's based on the Phuket sandbox structure and an idea. So we've been asking you whether you're ready to travel yet and what local locations you've missed visiting. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, before we cross over to our next guest, where our focus is going to be very much on flying, because getting to Langkawi, unless you are a patient person with a lot of driving stamina, often will require a flight. And we're going to talk about that and how to fly safely. But before that, we did want to look at some of the messages.
So Brian says, with the unprecedented COVID cases and death rates, it's wise to wait it out a bit. And, you know, Brian, I think a lot of people might resonate with that. We heard Nigel earlier talk about how you should absolutely only travel when you're comfortable and if that's something that you're sure you're ready to do. Mm. But I would like to hope that that we will see the SOPs being adhered to and that we're working towards being able to do this safely.
Ro, meanwhile, says, I'm feeling adventurous and ready to travel to PJ.
I mean, yes, I haven't been able to go to PJ without a permission letter for months.
I haven't been able to go to KL. I've forgotten what KLCC looks like. So, you know, yeah, the simplest things we haven't been able to do. So, you know, Ro, might have been a joke, but honestly, it would be a change of scene. We just want to know whether you're ready to travel. So far, it looks like, broadly speaking, no. But tell us, I mean, with Langkawi opening up, I mean, are you planning to head there? Are you ready to travel? What locations have you missed, PJ or otherwise? You can call us 7733 2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, joining us to talk about flying and flying safely is Dr. Victor Ho, Professor of Occupational and Public Health at the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Malaya. Dr. Victor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sharmila and Shirwan. Thank you for having me again. It's always good to be here.
So put simply, how safe is it to fly?
Well, I think flying is safe and of course you have to follow, you still have to follow SOP. If you follow the SOP, it should be safe. There's a simple way of saying it.
So let's imagine that we're boarding a flight then. From the time we arrive at the airport to the time that we reach our destination, what are the SOPs that we should be practicing?
All right. So firstly, the only thing you have to do is always put on your mask, make sure that your mask is on, and make sure you observe hand hygiene. And of course, the social distancing while you are in the airport and while you're checking in and you're waiting for your flight, waiting to board your flight, all those SOP must keep in place. But of course, when you go onto the flight, the social distancing issue become a problem already because you need to sit next to another person. So the only way you can do it is basically you have to wear a mask all the time while you're on the flight. And of course, the mask that you need to wear is your at least the 3-ply surgical mask, because that is the safest mask that you can wear.
And then from the point of view of the airlines, are there regulations that you want to make sure they have in place, like that you'd absolutely like to see?
Basically, the only thing we like to see is to ensure that people don't eat on flight. And of course, we're talking about a short haul flight now. All right. So a short haul flight, I think people shouldn't eat on flight. And currently, I think if our flights are basically the single aisle flight, is it safer than you have a jet flight where there's 2 hours and then the center seat is basically much more at risk because of how the air travels within the airplane.
And what about families traveling with unvaccinated children? What kind of precautions should they be taking?
I think it's the same precaution you need to take. Just got to wear a mask. And of course, it's possible because it's in an enclosed area, I would recommend that you also wear a face shield for that protection, because you're not worried about the person, you're not worried about you getting basically not following SOP, but what you're worrying about is the person next to you might not follow SOP and might take out the mask and might just cough, and then you would be affected. So it's better for you to wear a face shield, especially for the kids. All right, because we know the kids sometimes it's very difficult to wear a mask properly.
Dr. Victor, in closing, we're talking about this, of course, because Langkawi is being a pilot project for travel, but it looks as if in the coming months, you know, domestic travel does need to reopen at some point for those industry players. What message would you have for people who are considering it, who are thinking over whether or not they want to travel?
I think that traveling should be okay. Basically, if you want to travel, you need to ensure that where you go is they follow SOP. And during your flight, you need to ensure that the flight is safe, all right, and you follow all the SOP. The only thing you don't have to worry about is the airplane. Airplane is basically very safe because they have a HEPA filter, and also their air exchange is basically 2 to 3 minutes. They have actually fresh air coming in. So there's no issue with your airplane itself. The only problem is where you're waiting to board the flight. That's the problem. And of course, another issue you need to consider is when your flight is grounded, and that's where they turn off the aircon. Once they turn off the aircon, then it becomes a problem. So there was a case, basically a flight coming from Dubai going all the way to Auckland, and they stopped over in KL for half an hour. So during the stopover in KL, of course, no one get off or get on the flight, but because they are stopping in KL, usually they turn off the aircon, and there was a risk of transmission. Basically, 5 people actually got COVID from that flight, coming from Dubai to Auckland, stopping over at KL. So there was a case study, and they say that most probably because the airplane landed and usually they don't turn on the aircon, because if you need to turn on the aircon, you need to turn on your jet engine, and then you have other problem of overheating, things like that. So usually on the ground, they would hook onto a generator, and that's where they run the aircon. So it's important that the airline ensure that the aircon is always run when there's a patient, there's a passenger inside the airline. But traveling itself, it should be okay. And I physically encourage people to travel, but try to travel to places where there's less crowds and social distancing can be done. And of course, traveling to some places there where there's open space, to the beach or to places like that, then that should be okay, not an enclosed area. The SOP still holds. If you follow the SOP, basically it's very, very simple for you to decide where you can go and where you cannot go.
Excellent. Dr. Victor, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too. That was Dr. Victor Ho, Professor of Occupational and Public Health at the Faculty of Medicine at University of Malaya, talking to us about whether or not it's safe to fly. And honestly, you know, being very reassuring in terms of as long as we are responsible, follow the SOPs, which we should be doing everywhere anyway, it's relatively safe. So we'd like to know, armed with that knowledge, are you ready to travel? Are there any local locations you've missed visiting? You can, of course, call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be moving on to looking at the future of travel after it's been so severely impacted by the pandemic over the last couple of years. But we do have some messages in the meantime answering these questions.
So Camilla says, I'm ready to go back to our beaches or even to Singapore, but I'd rather drive than fly. It would take me days to get over the anxiety of being in an airport and plane, and the holiday would be over by the time I calm myself down. Camilla, I literally said almost exactly that to Lynn before we started the show today, that I'm quite looking forward to be able to go to places, but I don't know if I can yet deal with the multiple checkpoints of getting to an airport and flying. So I think for the moment, for me, I'd rather drive.
For what it's worth, I've flown once in the last 45 years of the pandemic. Anyway, I have flown once. It was a very short flight just to Kota Bharu, and it felt very safe, I think, for all the reasons that we just heard Dr. Victor describe. The waiting is a little bit nerve-wracking, yes, but I think in the airport, you actually have quite a fair amount of control, unlike the plane where you've got your ticket and you're seated wherever you may be seated. But in the airport, I think, if you're uncomfortable, you can always move. And so I completely understand the anxiety. It's definitely how I felt prior to flying, but sort of getting over the hump made it a lot easier. Adlina says, I'm dying for a beach holiday, but I guess I might wait it out. The cases are still high. Many aren't fully vaccinated too. And Adlina, if it's any comfort, Dr. Victor did specifically mention beaches as a pretty safe open air space to be in. So yes, keep those thoughts coming. We want to hear from you. Are you ready to travel yet? Since starting from September 16th onwards, Langkawi will be welcoming domestic visitors. Aside from Langkawi, or including Langkawi, what are some of the local locations you've missed? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, the difficult question of what the future holds for tourism. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:50. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're focused today on travel because, after all, Langkawi is going to be our pilot project to reinvigorating domestic tourism, welcoming domestic visitors from September 16th onwards. So we've been asking you whether you're ready to travel yet and where you'd like to visit. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we want to look at what the future might be for tourism and travel, because, of course, new normal and all that, pandemic and all that, it's been one of the hardest hit industries. So joining us to talk about this is Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson, a travel consultancy firm. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So tourism has resumed in other parts of the world. We've seen people posting and flying. What can you tell us about how that's going?
Sure. Well, I'll share with you a few different examples. So one really interesting example is the Maldives. So Maldives opened all the way back in July 2020. So this was before vaccinations were even there, that you just had to test negative on arrival. And they've actually been doing pretty well. They've had a few hiccups along the way, you know, they've had, you know, surging cases earlier in the year. But they released their January to July tourism arrival numbers, and they were only about 23% down on 2019 arrivals, which is pretty impressive given the overall, you know, economic climate. And it was 58 times more than this time last year. So whatever they are doing, it, they have really cracked it. I mean, closer to home, you've got things like the Phuket Sandbox. So this is this concept of opening up Phuket to vaccinated travelers without any quarantine. And they did this on the 1st of July. And this, I mean, to give it its due, it has not been quite as successful, really, as the Maldives. It's a step forward, which I think Southeast Asia absolutely needs. But, you know, so far, they've had about 26,000 tourists. So that's not huge numbers to brag about. I mean, this is Thailand, right? This is Phuket. They had this original target of hitting 100,000 tourists for Q3, which was pretty aggressive. And I think just now they're starting to say, actually, do you know what, guys, this might not happen. So it's really been mixed. You look at Europe, travel is kind of booming across Europe for Europeans around there. But, you know, let's see what happens coming into the winter season.
How has COVID impacted the way people get from one destination to another?
That's really interesting. And I think we have seen, particularly in Southeast Asia, an increase in self-drive. I think a lot of people are more willing to get in the car than they are to get on a plane. There's really that fear, right, about being in a tube in the sky with very limited circulation of air. We've seen different countries in Southeast Asia developing these things. So the Philippines, they've been developing motorbike tourism, developing all of these different circuits you can do it around. In Indonesia, there's been this growing interest in getting around by bike. So there is definitely a lot more land transportation, I think, going on rather than air transportation.
Overall then, as travellers, do you expect that our needs or appetite for certain experiences have changed and will continue to evolve?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, having been cooped up at home for so many months, I think everybody wants to get outside. They want to be outdoors. They want to be in nature. And there's definitely this perception that it's less dangerous. You know, being in a confined space, even if you were thinking about seeing like the must-see spots, you probably don't want to be around that many people, right? You, if you did, you would definitely visit off-peak. You would really do your research and figure out when people don't tend to visit so you could kind of get your own experience. But really, short-term, we're seeing this kind of swing towards people doing glamping and camping and getting outdoors and exploring. And I think that will last for a while longer. You know, I think now people are really starting to explore their own backyards, and it's linked to this self-drive concept as well, to be able to do camping. I think that's a trend that's here to stay.
So this whole conversation today began with the idea for the Langkawi travel bubble, right? Are travel bubbles going to be the norm moving forward, and how might this shape the way we plan for our holidays?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, travel bubbles, I feel like I've been talking about them since this time last year. And, you know, it all started with the Australia-New Zealand travel bubble. And there's really kind of four different types of reopening that countries are pursuing right now. So you've got one, which is where you just open up a very specific part of the country. So this is like Phuket. So you're just opening up Phuket, nowhere else, and like Langkawi potentially too. You've got the other kind, which is you have these reciprocal agreements between countries. So the example, Australia, New Zealand, you could travel anywhere within those countries, but you can only go between those two countries. Then you've got more kind of unilateral openings to certain countries. So you're saying, okay, I think that this country is safe and I will allow them in, but they might not let your travelers out. So a good example is Singapore and China. So Singapore has been allowing Chinese travelers into Singapore without quarantine for many months, at least since last year. But Singaporeans are not afforded those same benefits when they travel to China. And the last kind of opening you've got is this unilateral opening to all vaccinated travelers. So something like Dubai has done, for example, where you say, doesn't matter where you're from, so long as you're vaccinated and you've got a vaccine certificate, you can come in with no quarantine. So travel going forwards, it's going to be really complicated, basically. So, you know, if you're deciding where you're going to take a trip, you're going to be looking at what kind of arrangement does my country have with them? Am I vaccinated with the right kind of vaccine? Because, you know, maybe you've got Sinovac, maybe that's not recognized by other countries. Can my kids come? So Singapore have just opened up this vaccinated travel lane to Germany and that's launching next week, but under 12s aren't allowed. So that, you know, strikes out the family vacation, no family vacations to Germany for Singaporeans. Are you going to have lots of tests? Are they going to be expensive? Are you going to have to quarantine on your return? I really see people, you know, if they're looking to plan outbound travel, when hopefully outbound travel is permitted again from Malaysia, people are going to be looking at what country is the easiest. It's not even necessarily going to be, you know, where do I really want to go? It's perhaps I want to travel. Okay, Maldives has very few requirements. I can just book a flight, have a negative RT-PCR test, and go in, rather than have to apply for a certificate and do this and do that. And yeah, I think it's going to be about looking for the simplest route to go out.
Hannah, we just have a couple of minutes left with you. And I think that the issue of cost is a huge one, because it's always been for travel. But how will COVID-19, or how has COVID-19 affected the cost of travel in the short and long term?
Good question. So in the short term, definitely there's plenty of extra costs. So I was just saying the RT-PCR tests, you know, for Singapore, that could add up to $800 for a round trip. You know, that's almost the price of a plane ticket to Germany. If you're trying to travel as a group, you're going to be traveling in a smaller group. So it's not going to be as cheap as it was. But saying that, we're still going to see airlines and hotels still throwing out really cheap prices because they want to compensate. They know that right now is not the time to hike up your prices. They just need to get people in the rooms on the planes. But longer term, you know, that might reverse. We might see RT-PCR test costings come down, or maybe they're not mandated at all. But flights and hotels are slowly going to have to increase their prices because, you know, they were costed on a previous higher price than they are now.
And I think we have just enough time to ask this question. Will the future of travel then eventually see a return to some kind of pre-pandemic normal?
I like to be optimistic. So I really hope yes. But, you know, I think people still have a will to travel. They've always had that need to connect with other people. But I don't see that happening next year. And the problem is that the longer people are restricted, even with domestic travel restrictions, the harder it is going to be to get back to that new normal and get over that kind of psychological impact of being told it's not safe to travel. So, yes, but it's going to take a while, I think.
Hannah, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.
That was Hannah Pearson from travel consultancy Per Anderson talking to us about the future of travel. And that's really what we've been talking about this hour. Let us know, are you ready to return to being able to travel once more? Are there locations that you've missed? Call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. We'll be back after the 7 o'clock news. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.